Because I'm never one within my coaching style to dictate or tell anybody what they need to do with regards to how they should treat alcohol to go sober or anything like that. And the approach that I take is I'll give you the information and I'll educate you, and then you're going to be best positioned to make your own decisions. And in that initial instance, it's almost like we have this ego spike. I see it so often where it's like, I don't have a problem. And then we really break it down. And before we know it, 80% of my clients go sober off their own accord because they start to understand and I guess reframe what quote unquote a problem is. It's like a problem isn't I'm an alcoholic, I'm brushing my teeth with a strong bro, like I referenced earlier. It's beyond the means of being useful or healthy. It's outside of those healthy bounds. But I think that sometimes can be a bit of a process for people to have to go through where they go through that recognition phase, and self-awareness is obviously a huge part of that. And a saying I often say is self-awareness is the key to salvation.
The Modern Man Method Podcast, your compass to peak performance and achieving your potential. I'm Jack Taylor, owner of the Modern Man Method and a peak performance and behavior change specialist. Join us as we explore the three essential pillars to unlocking a life of purpose and confidence: man, mind, and mastery. This podcast is designed to help you discover authentic masculinity through powerful conversations around fitness, health, lifestyle, and mental resilience. I hope you enjoy and make sure to subscribe.
Today's episode is with Chris Howe. Chris is a great coach in the high performance space, but one thing that sparked my curiosity to bring him on today is his openness around the topic of alcohol, a topic I believe makes people uncomfortable to talk about. In the UK, it's the one drug that if you don't take it, you're made to feel boring and square. It's a conversation I'm passionate about, as I feel most of us are naive to the true effects it may be having on our lives. So in today's episode, we discuss the effect alcohol could be having on you personally, socially, and professionally, the consequences of burying your head in the sand around your consumption, how to build a better relationship with alcohol, and how to avoid the common challenges associated with lowering your alcohol intake. I really enjoyed this episode, and I think we were able to drop a lot of practical advice that you can implement straight away. I hope you enjoy. Now let's dive in. Right, Chris, thank you for being here, mate.
No problem, mate. Yeah, how are you? You all right?
I'm well, thank you. Very well. I'm excited for today. I'm looking forward to us diving into a topic that is close to both of our hearts.
Good.
So let's dive straight into it. Talk me through, and can you share a bit of background about yourself? I know we, prior to hopping onto the episode, have already had a bit of lip service around what we're gonna, where you've been and your journey, but for the audience, kind of what your journey has been like, and ultimately then topic of today's episode is going to be around what led you to going down the path of being sober.
No problem. So as I stand here today, results coach for senior execs and business owners, and one of my niches is alcohol, and the reason for that, and I guess the people that I'm trying to talk to, I'm trying to talk to people, essentially me, what, 6, 7, 8 years ago. High pressure job, director, senior exec, quite a lot of staff. I worked in the recruitment sector, so quite a big team across the country. And beyond that, my product and my commodity was also people. A lot of work that I did was in the sort of warehouse logistics sector, so high volume, high spend. You know, these are customers that could be spending, you know, the largest customer I work with is spending over £30 million a year on agency labor. So big customers, very high and senior relationships, very demanding, very volume critical. We were at the sort of the coal face of making sure that retail volumes were being delivered for retailers. So it came with a lot of pressure. And with that was a relationship with alcohol that wasn't, well, I now know and now realise, wasn't actually serving me particularly well in that type of role. If I think back to that period of time, it was pretty painful, to be honest. My stress levels in that job, you're going to experience stress, but with stress, you know, everyone gets stress, but it's how you deal with it. It's how you almost communicate with stress. It's how you manage your stress. and under the influence of regular alcohol drinking, I just wasn't dealing with it well at all, not one bit. And if I give you some examples of what I recognised, and this then gets me to the trigger point of me taking a decision to think I've got to change something here. So I became quite defensive. If I had a client coming at me, and these are senior people for problems with service, you always have problems with service in that type of recruitment because you're relying on people. I was very defensive. I was quite antagonistic. I don't believe that I was handling those situations particularly well. I was taking it home. Only when I broke my relationship with alcohol did I realise that I was actually being quite short and impatient with my kids. That's my biggest win. We'll probably talk about that a little further in the conversation when we start talking about the brighter side of my journey. But in short, I then started to realise that I've got a bit of an issue that needs resolving here. And it took a long time, Jack, for me to actually own up to that to myself. And I'll comment a lot about this, is that I think that it's people that are full addicted alcoholics. I was more of a heavy, you know, middle lane drinker, should we say. Now, this wasn't a bottle of cider in the morning at 7 o'clock, for example, and drinking throughout the day, vodka at night, blah, blah, blah. It was just regular, consistent drinking, something that's quite normal for a lot of people in society nowadays. And I just started to recognise that my behaviours weren't like what they had been and how I'd risen through my career in the recruitment sector. And I noticed some behaviours that I didn't like. And even to the stage, and this is where there was a real red flag moment for me. My anxiety got to a point where I could even break out in a bit of sweat, you know. And I could be in a meeting, even an internal meeting, and I could feel, you see it on cartoons when the cartoon character gets anxious and then there's sort of the bead of sweat coming down the head. Well, that happened to me and I had to leave in 1 week. It was three meetings I had to leave because I felt that uncomfortable. And it's at this point where I'm thinking, you know, shit, this isn't good now. And then the final point was at home because my kids were young, you know, they were toddlers, you know, squawking, crying, tantrums, the works. Oh, I just wasn't coping very well with it at all. And I knew there'd come a point where I thought, you know what, something's got to give here, because if not, all of this perceived success that you've got your lovely company car, you've got a lovely salary, you've got a bit of bonus at the year end, you've got a lovely job title, but all of that could come tumbling down quite easily if things don't change. So that's probably, hopefully, gives a little bit of a sort of a background on, yeah, where I came from, really, and that sort of light bulb moment, for want of a better phrase.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. And I know for a lot of people, when they go through some form of a transformational process, be it they stop drinking, they decide to take their health more seriously, there's often like some form of visceral catalyst moment that they remember where, like you say, maybe it was that argument, right? Maybe it was with a spouse or with a boss or with their kids. Do you have any catalyst moment that you can remember where it was one that's a little bit more poignant and you're like, you know what, something's got to change?
Yeah. And I'm gonna give you two, because actually two have just sprung to mind. The first one, I was in my old house where I used to live. I'm originally from Stoke, Newcastle-under-Lyme, so is where before I moved to where I am now. And I remember getting in from work, another stressful day, a lot of stuff coming at me. Went to the bathroom, finished in the bathroom. And before I left the bathroom, I could just hear the kids squawking and crying. And that noise was piercing. That toddler cry was just piercing my eardrums. And it was almost echoing around my brain. And I remember just stooping, you know, sort of a squat, Astagrass squat, with my head in my hands. I was just like, I was just on the verge. I haven't had a breakdown. And I haven't had a mental breakdown, but I'm confident that I've been bloody close to breaking point, really. And that was one of those times. And I went downstairs to speak to my missus to say, that's it. Something's got to change, because mentally, you know, as well as, I mean, physically, I was putting a few pounds on. I would always yo-yo over my weight. But that was one time where, and it was, but it was when mentally it was really, I was feeling the pinch. And then another time, same period, met up with an old friend in the pub around the corner from where I lived. I was in a position at work where it was really, really, really stressful. And in addition to the client pressures, there was a bit of toxicity in the work environment, which was really, really, really affecting me and really getting quite frustrating. And I remember being in the pub, and the friend of mine, he did chuckle at me a little bit. And I remember him saying to my wife, who was with me, "Look at him, look at him." And I'd gone. I was so far in my own thoughts, in my own head. Anything around me was just, I was oblivious to it. I was just so far in my own mind and my own thoughts. You know, I was very far from present at that point in time. But I remember him saying it, and I remember almost coming out of that thought and seeing my wife and seeing him and thinking, Jesus Christ, I was so, so deep in those negative, stressful, painful thoughts. I was oblivious to everything that was going on around me. And that was quite scary because, as I say, I didn't have a full nervous breakdown, but I was 100% skirting around, you know, virtually going off the edge. And that was a second time that, and the important thing here is, from the outside, apart from him seeing me engrossed in my thoughts, the outsider looking in, the person seeing me in work, you know, Chris doing a presentation, you know, delivering a very articulate presentation, because that's what I did, you know, very good customer facing. I could put the veneer on, I could put the face on, I could put the brave face, but it was such hard work to do that. It just made every day 10 times harder than it needed to be because of the job that I had to do. So those are, when you, I know you asked one, so apologies for putting two out there, but there's two sort of very distinct sort of things that I remember where it was upstairs was starting to tell me, well, it told me, this is it now, something's got to give. So
for sure. And I think I know there will be many guys that are listening to this who will relate and resonate to that in some capacity, whether that be the way that they're being quite reactive towards a partner or to their kids. They may be having intrusive thoughts that are coming through their mind that they're like, probably shouldn't be thinking that towards that person because it's someone that I actually love or whatnot. And that ability to, or lack of ability, should we say, to be present and really be where your feet are. I think it's one of the symptoms of being super stressed and potentially using a vice like drinking, is that it can really make you insular. It can really like keep you in your head as opposed to being in your body, as the saying goes. So I definitely believe there will be guys who will resonate with that. Now, something that I'm interested to hear on your part, because I've got my own thoughts on this as well. How did you come to that point of accepting that maybe this was a problem? Because I think I have this conversation quite frequently, especially in British culture, right? Drinking is so normal, as it were. And when we're talking about alcohol, so many people will have that emotional spike of, I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with alcohol because I'm not an alcoholic, like you mentioned earlier, because I'm not somebody that's drinking at 7 a.m. and brushing my teeth with a can of Strongbow. It's like, that means I don't have a problem, right? But it's almost like, where's the line of something that is in excess of and therefore unhealthy? And I think it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts, both personally and also professionally, helping others around this. How did you accept that actually it's beyond that point, even though I'm not someone who I would traditionally believe to be have an alcohol issue, let's say, but recognizing within yourself, you know what, this is unhealthy and this is too much?
Yeah, so look, there are guidelines, which is produced in units that, I'll be honest, I think it's quite confusing because a unit differs dependent on the strength of the alcohol and then the size of the glass that you're drinking. So can be a little bit confusing. However, there are published guidelines in terms of what is a tolerable allowance, should we say, of responsible drinking of alcohol in the UK. If you look at those allowances. It's not a lot at all. It's just not a lot, you know. If you're drinking, you know, 5 pints on a Friday and you'll have a few more on a Saturday afternoon, you'll have done the limit, you know. You'll have done the limit, job done. And then, so people watching this, if I think about myself, you put the blinkers on. Don't really want to acknowledge that you've got a problem with alcohol. You turn a blind eye to the hangovers, the stress and the anxiety. You'll find other reasons for why you feel like that. You know, you'll look at your health and your fitness. I mean, I used to beast myself, you know, weighted HIIT training and everything. And actually, in my head, it's crazy, really. I was doing that to make sure that I could free up the space to allow me to have a drink of alcohol because of the calories and everything else. That's just a mental, you know, when you look back now, you think, that's mental, that is. You know, you're cracking on at the gym just to give yourself the freedom to then be able to go and lob a load of ale down your neck. And, you know, once upon a time, crikey, the amounts I'd be drinking, you know. I mean, in a weekend, you know, this is when I'm out partying every weekend. So I'm out Friday night, I'm out Friday night, I'm out Saturday night, and I'll have a few beers Saturday afternoon and Sunday afternoon. I could dead easy top up, you know, 25, 30 beers plus shorts, a couple of shots and all that caper. But I'm drinking in the week as well. So in terms of acknowledging it, and I made this comment on social media, actually, that I think it takes real guts and real bravery for someone to just sit there, what their own, in their own, in the look in the mirror and say, look, I know I've got an issue here, and I know it's something I've got to deal with. And I'm not then, I got picked up on this, actually. And there was a misinterpretation of what I'm saying. That my point here is that for you to, when you're in the realms of drinking regularly, however heavy that is, you know, and if you are a middle lane drinker where it's a couple of three beers and a glass of wine with the partner in an evening and a few more at the weekend, you know, if you're a middle lane drinker, actually recognizing I've got a problem and being brave enough to do that, I think it's massive. In terms of me making that decision, it was because of the mental state I've got myself in and the pressure I'd got with work. And I just knew. And when I had those situations where I'd got the cartoon anxiety stress coming down the side of my head, I knew what that was. I'd done enough work on sort of and on health and training, and I'd learned enough through various diets I'd been doing and studying and the education I'd had around all my training. I knew what my body was doing was flirting toxins out. What are them toxins? And I knew what the toxins were. It wasn't very difficult for me to work that out. So I suppose maybe I was fortunate enough that I'd had enough education for me to sort of know what it was. But it's a real brave thing to do, in my opinion, because it really isn't easy, because that alcohol voice is always going to be telling you, it's fine. Yeah, it's a good idea. Just one more.
It's normal. Everyone does it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Guys, just a quick one. I really appreciate you hopping in here and listening to these episodes each and every week. I try and fill these with as much value as possible to give you the tools to be able to transform not only your mind and your body, but ultimately your life. Now, I just want to ask a very quick favor from yourself. If you could spend 10 seconds to just leave a review on whatever platform you're listening to, then that would mean the world to me. But more importantly, it might actually be able to change the world of someone else. And if that wasn't enough, at the end of every month, I'm going to be choosing one person from those who have reviewed for a free coaching call. Thank you, and back to the show. And I think what it sounds like as well is that due to the circumstance you were in, it was almost as if alcohol had made itself known to you, as opposed to maybe the other way around. Like, you were, due to education, due to certain circumstances and you being self-aware, you were aware and able to attribute the way in which I feel to alcohol quite quickly. Whereas you alluded to there as well, there are certainly people who are in denial around, let's say they wake up on a Sunday, or no, not even a Sunday. Let's say they wake up on a Monday and Tuesday because they didn't drink the night before, but they did drink on Saturday and they feel like shit. And they don't then attribute that feeling to the heavy session they had on a Saturday, right? Because as we know, when we drink, it's not just a 24-hour thing. We stop producing dopamine for a good couple of days. So on and so forth. It's a lagging effect. You won't really feel right until a Wednesday, and by that point, you may be drinking again already. So I think a lot of people, when I open up this dialogue with them, because I'm never one within my coaching style to dictate or tell anybody what they need to do with regards to how they should treat alcohol to go sober or anything like that. And the approach that I take is I'll give you the information and I'll educate you, and then you're going to be best positioned to make your own decisions. And in that initial instance, it's almost like we have this ego spike. I see it so often where it's like, I don't have a problem. And then we really break it down. And before we know it, 80% of my clients go sober off their own accord because they start to understand and I guess reframe what quote unquote a problem is. It's like a problem isn't I'm an alcoholic, I'm brushing my teeth with a strong bro like I referenced earlier. It's beyond the means of being useful or healthy. It's outside of those healthy bounds. But I think that sometimes can be a bit of a process for people to have to go through, where they go through that recognition phase, and self-awareness is obviously a huge part of that. And saying I often say is self-awareness is the key to salvation, right? So yeah, it's interesting to just see your own journey with that and processing that and recognizing, putting two and two together and going, you know what, if I was to change this certain set of behaviors, it would probably lead to a different set of outcomes.
Yeah, and I think something that I've spoken about this before is that growing up, you know, I've got working class roots. Every time my mum and dad got together with friends and my relatives at Christmas, they had loads of fun. I heard Bally's laughing, and it's because they were having a drink. So I automatically associated having fun with having a drink. So as soon as I was 18, the normal, well, I'll go out, I have a drink, because that's what the parents did. It was almost ingrained in me. And it was slightly embarrassingly, it took me till the age of 40 to then really start fully understanding exactly what alcohol is doing to your body, because I was just masked with that it's fun. And I think, you know, you mentioned the word education then, because it got me thinking. And I think that's half the battle, really. I do think there's a real misunderstanding and a naivety and maybe an ignorance for a lot of people in terms of fully understanding and appreciating the damage that regular drinking of alcohol can cause, you know. And as I say, it took me until I'd gone past the 40 mark to learn that myself, which crazy really, but I suppose that then leans into the fact of how it's so socially normal, so socially acceptable, and it's the one drug that people will question why you're not having it rather than why you do, you know. So I think education's a big thing, and that's something with the work I'm doing now. In fact, you know, beyond this call, I've got my clients together on a group call today, and that'll be geared around education around alcohol again, because I think a lot of clients know they need to change. That's why they've come to me, but not necessarily understanding why they need to change, you know. So education's missing, I think, quite a lot.
Agreed. Yeah, absolutely agreed. I think we all pay for many different reasons. I talk about this frequently, like an ignorance tax. And I think the quicker we can close that gap, the better. For you, if you were to pick like some key points, because we could obviously get super scientific and neurological when we're diving into the effects of alcohol, but to spare each other and the audience, like what would you say your key notes are of the impacts that alcohol was having, like on you, and also it does on other people?
Yeah, main thing. So if you think about, well, we know for a fact it doesn't do your gut health any good whatsoever. You'll have inflammation within your gut, which has an impact. If you've got a good diet, which I generally tried to have, you're not getting the maximum benefits because your gut's not going to be processing and digesting all the good stuff as well as it should do. That's the first thing. But the main thing for me is the fact that even if you just have two or three beers on a Saturday night, for example, your body will still produce more cortisol beyond that Saturday night going into the following week. So something that I've become really, really sensitive to now, because every now and again, I may choose to have a drink. You know, I had 2.5 years not drinking whatsoever. And now I choose to have a drink every now and again, and that's cool because I've got control of the relationship. I control it. It doesn't control me anymore. But you can't just do that overnight. But that's the thing that I've noticed is if I did have a couple of glasses of champagne to toast somebody at a wedding, you know, or chose to have, you know, an ale on Christmas Day, whatever it's going to be, I will still feel that little bit of stress the following day and the day after. And I know what's caused it. I know exactly what's caused it and why it's there. And that was something at the time, I just thought it was my job. And a lot of it was my job, you know, because it was a stressful job. But I didn't need to be as stressed as I felt. I didn't need to feel like that at all, you know. So I would say that's probably, I'll probably put them in the wrong way around, but that's my biggest thing is, yeah, cortisol and the impact that that then has on your body above and beyond.
Which speaks perfectly to what we were just saying there, right? Is let's say on a Saturday night, you go out, you get on it, and then Tuesday morning, Tuesday lunch even, just come off the back of a meeting, and you're like, ah, fuck, I feel stressed. I feel heightened right now. And like you say, you've got the cartoon-like beads of sweat running down your face, and you're profusely sweating. You've got the jitters. You feel quite angsty. We wrongly attribute that solely to the meeting or to other things because it's what's happened in the past 20 minutes. And this is how humans often operate is we have an emotional spike and then we look around us to try and attribute it to the immediate environment. Whereas actually, like you say, because your cortisol levels have been heightened at least above a healthy baseline for the past couple of days, it really impacts your ability to manage stressful situations. So your bucket, as it were, is just significantly smaller with often quite a heavier amount of water having to go into it. So it's like the adverse of what we want is we're not prepping ourselves to be able to deal with stressful situations better. It's the worst. So the slight inconvenience can just completely send you over the edge, right?
100%, yeah. And I mean, I was talking to a client. So this guy's trying to, he's working on moderation and we're going through a process. You mentioned this earlier. Everybody's got their own little, I don't like the word journey. That's just a me thing, but maybe their own process for that. Everyone goes through their own process. But he was, you know, he ended up having a weekend where he ended up having a slip. And he got a really big project happening on the Tuesday. Where he was there, it's his business, he leads the business, he oversees the business, and he basically sat in the corner on his laptop and did his very best to just stay out of the way all day. I had a one-to-one call with him on the Tuesday, and he was embarrassed, he was disappointed, because he knows exactly why he was behaving in that way on that day. Because he'd ended up having a bloody skinful on the Saturday night, more than what he had a plan, but he had more than what his plan was and let slip. I'll say this quite a lot on social media. He was just he was a waste of a good shirt for the entire day. Say that again because I've just had a courier driver press the bell. He was a waste of a good shirt on that day, and all because, you know, wind it back and we can blame wherever we want to. He knew exactly why it was because he'd let himself down as such on drinking so much on the Saturday. And look, it impacts people in different ways, doesn't it? You know, I work with people where they don't get too much anxiety. I did personally. But it's lethargy and then just eating crap, you know, just eating whatever they fancy because that's just how they feel after they've had a drink and stuff. So yeah, the aftermath and the, before you even get into the good stuff and all the positives that come with having a good relationship with alcohol, you know, the list of the painful stuff, the negative stuff, you know, it's horrendous. You know, you can start getting into looking at, you know, just vital stats, you know, blood pressure, you know, your standing heart rate. I typically, when people have stopped drinking, you'll see between 10 and 20% reduction in their, just the heart rate, you know, just because they're not drinking. So if that isn't, you know, doesn't give you a real simple view of the impact that alcohol's having and that raised level of cortisol and that raised heart rate, which, well, it's not great, is it? You know, it just, well, what is?
Completely agree. I've got a whole mastermind inside of, almost like a mini series inside of my modern man mastery for my clients to help them to understand like the effects of alcohol. Again, like I mentioned, I never put on a limit as to what I believe they should be drinking. I can obviously advise them based on the goals they want to achieve and say that if you're wanting to drop, let's say, a stone in the next couple of months, probably doesn't make sense for you to be caning it every week. But I think by providing them with education, it does just overcome that ignorance tax. And it can, for a lot of people, be quite confronting. But I think then they're, like I say, they're better positioned to be able to make better decisions for their life. And as a result, they often get better outcomes. But there's something you mentioned that I want to pull it back to that I think is really important as we caveat into the next question, which is around challenges. Like what challenges you faced when it came to actually making this change. You mentioned something which I believe to be true, right? Is that especially in this culture, in the UK, it's a massive thing. You have this association of fun, meeting friends. Of course, that equals alcohol. Like it can't not equal alcohol, right? I've grown up around Christmas. Everybody's absolutely shit-faced falling into the tree, right? So I think over here, it's a really prevalent thing where any form of social event, any form of celebration, whether that be a holiday festivity or a birthday or a works do or a promotion, any of the above, right? It's often got a heavy label of alcohol that's associated with it. How did you find navigating that and creating a new relationship with that, as well as other challenges that you maybe faced?
So sober socializing. So that is, you know, it is tough to start with, particularly if for the last 20 to 25 years, every social activity that you've done, every social event, you've had a drink. So it's quite a considerable habitual change, really, you know, and it's not easy. It's not easy at all. But in terms of overcoming that, well, first things first, and I personally believe there's quite a bit of work you've got to do before you get to that point. My normal advice is someone's going to break the chain and they're going to go sober is do your best to stay out of harm's way just for a period of time whilst we're sort of detoxing the body. When it comes to going out socially, there needs to be a game plan. So first of all, making sure that people know and understand the reasons why you're not drinking and what are the reasons for that. And almost have an elevator pitch ready. So when somebody asks, you're not drinking, you're boring, why not have a shot? You know, you've got your line of why you're not drinking. So mine would have been, you know, too much stress at work, you know, not a great dad at home. And I'm choosing to not drink. I actually choose to label it as a challenge, actually, for a period of time. A bit like, you know, when you do like a dry January or there's another one, October, whatever it is. I don't know, there's a few months cropped up for it. So that's the first thing, is you've got to make sure that you've got your patter ready. The second thing is making sure that you've got a plan. You know, once you've told everybody and everybody accepts, I'm not going to be drinking alcohol, but what are you going to drink? You know, don't just turn up at the bar without a plan of what you're going to drink. If it's going to be that you're on Diet Coke or there's a couple of mocktails that you like, or they've got a nice selection of alcohol-free beers, because that market is exploding at the moment with loads of good stuff now. We don't just have to rely on the dusty Becks in the corner that never gets touched, you know, the Becks Zero. There's a lot of good options, but have a plan. Because once you've got that planning, you know when you're going to the bar and you're ordering your drink, you know what you're ordering. You don't stand there and start looking at the optics or looking at the draft and think to myself, oh, maybe I'll just have one. That's quite important. And sometimes, I already mentioned it, sometimes you might have to steer clear of some social events initially, just while you're getting control of this change. I was speaking to a client yesterday, he did a similar thing. He went out socially. A, chose to drive, so there's quite a good blocker there in terms of not drinking, and most people will be compassionate to that if you're driving. And second of all, he did leave a little bit earlier. Now, that's obviously quite different to the circumstances he was in, you know, when he'd be 7, 8, 9 pints deep by the time he'd left on this particular event. But again, he just got himself out of harm's way. So there's quite a lot of work you've got to do in terms of there's buildings of a bit of a tactical plan almost, really, to get yourself in a place that you can be comfortable going out socially. But then there's two things that we're trying to get a hold of now at this point. So you've got all your tactics, you've got your strategy. You know, it's going to be a bit of a challenge. It's going to be hard work. It's going to be some uncomfortable conversations. You're going to have to roll your eyes two or three times when people ask you why you're not drinking or saying you're boring. But as part of this process that we spoke about, and everyone's different, it's then about getting hold of the negatives. So why are you stopping drinking? So my example was anxiety and stress. Well, let's just say they were the main things. I want rid of that feeling. I want it gone because it's not serving me whatsoever. And it's not helping me in a work environment. And I'm concerned that I'm just going to bloody implode at work. So you've got all of your negatives. Something I did, I journaled and I actually recorded videos of myself in the aftermath. So when I'd had a drink, and this is when I'm starting to, I'm looking at stopping drinking. I did a video of myself on a Sunday morning after a good heavy Friday and a Saturday. And I felt awful. I looked terrible. I looked like shit. Bags, you know, just skin was shit. Everything just looked like shit. And I videoed myself. And that was then always a little go-to for me. As I'm getting through the process of stopping drinking, I'm thinking, I need to get into that pain because I've got an itch now. And I'm thinking I might have a beer tonight. Well, no, because I watched that video and think, I can't be feeling like that. And because it's me, I automatically related to exactly how I felt. So that's all your negative stuff. But then equally, once you've had a period of sobriety, and a period of sobriety for me, if I'm being honest, minimum 28, 30 days. Ideally, you've flirted your way through 40 to 50 because there's a little bit of a magical spell there where there is a little piece of magic that happens there when you've not been drinking for that period of time. There's something that happens. I got it at 42 days. This excitement that I'm doing it sort of thing. But when you've had a break of that length and you're starting to then get a grip of doing the socializing, you've told enough people that everyone supports you. Your true friends are sticking with you. The ones that maybe aren't good mates have probably left you in the lurch. You start to get hold of some of the good stuff. So I've now woke up for several weekends feeling great. I've been out and done some really productive stuff with my kids. This is when I realised how impatient I was with my kids because I was in my old house just next village up from where I live. I sat with my youngest, Henry. And I was sitting, he got a little clock, still got the same clock here, still got it actually. And he got this little clock on his wall. And I went up and we're reading his, you know, these little books. It was only, how old were you then? Four or five, something like that. A toddler, you know, so you're sitting in bed, relaxing him for bedtime, reading his book, going through the book, reading it together and having a chat and did another book. I looked up and thought, bloody hell, I've been up here for an hour and a half now. Jesus Christ, I'm so relaxed, really enjoying myself. Whereas historically, I'd be trying to get the boot read as quick as I could, get his head on the pillow and turn the light off so I could get downstairs and crack a beer open or sit and have a glass of wine with the missus, you know. And that itch, that alcoholic voice and that itch for wanting a beer, because that's what happens, was forcing me to expedite this quality time I should have been having with my little nipper. Of two lads, so little nippers. And this is quite embarrassing, but so enlightening for me and a proper, you know, a real light bulb moment is when I sat there and looked at the clock and realised I'd been there for an hour and a half and I was still really enjoying myself and I was super relaxed and I wasn't going to rush downstairs for a beer because I wasn't drinking because I was breaking the cycle. I was on my sober room. And it was only then I realised how impatient I'd been. And this is probably the most embarrassing thing. And hopefully, even if it's one person that watches this podcast can recognize this and I can help them, then it's brilliant. Because the most embarrassing thing is that I didn't recognize and certainly wasn't willing to acknowledge that I was being impatient with my kids at bedtime. It was only when I'd stopped drinking and I was, you know, quite a good way into my period of sobriety that I then thought, shit. I now realise how much of a dick I was at bedtime. Never anything bad, you know. There's never anything. I'm certainly not built in that way. But just let's get this done. Let's get this chore done as quick as I can. And I can get back downstairs again. You know. So I'm quite embarrassed about that, really. But Ace, that I've learned that now, and I understand that, you know. So
100%. I appreciate you sharing that because, again, I know there will be people in some capacity, whether it be their kids or someone else who means a lot to them, that they will recognize themselves in that situation where they are acting in a way that isn't in accordance to the man that they want to be. They recognize there's a lack of congruence between the way that they view themselves and what they're actually doing. And I think there are often, we've all experienced it, I'm sure, those confronting moments where we do have to be literally or figuratively look in the mirror and go, I need to sort this shit out. And I think that's, I always say there's tremendous amount of strength in vulnerability. So both the vulnerability that you showed with yourself to have that honest conversation and also bringing it to here today as well. I appreciate that. And I know the guys listening will as well.
Good, good.
Now, interesting what you said there, and I've not always thought about it in that way, but I do completely agree that there is a period of time of sobriety that I think, view it as a challenge, as you say, that is necessary to collect evidence that is needed in order to be able to move forward with that healthier relationship with alcohol. So I think within that period of sobriety, because we're motivated by pain or pleasure, there are two motivational levers that can be pulled.
Yep.
I think in the instance, what we can see from your journey there, which a lot of people can start to hopefully integrate into their own process, is you stimulated a lot of pain in the first instance to motivate you to not do a behavior that you didn't want to do, i.e. drinking. You used a really awesome tool of like having a piece of evidence, that photo or video of like yourself when you're, I'm assuming, extremely hungover, to recall back on whenever that itch was present. That's a really cool, that's a really awesome tactic. I'm sure we all fucking have them. So like, it's use that as evidence that this is why I'm not doing it. And I think what then happens is after that 40 to 50 day period, I always say 66 days is kind of a really good spot to commit to. After that period of time of 66 days, you've had enough weekends where you've woken up and had an extra day because you realized that a Sunday exists. You've spent time with your partner. You spent time with your family and your kids being super present. You've spent 66 days operating from a space of higher self. So in that period of time, you've collected so much evidence that actually this way of living is extremely pleasurable. You've also collected evidence, hopefully within that period of time, that I can socialize sober. Yeah. I can go and meet friends for a walk and do different kind of social activities. So I think that's the main thing to take away for people as well, is that it doesn't have to be this thing that is a forever thing. If it doesn't have to be that way, it can be a 66 day period of time, let's say, but the reason behind it is it's within those 66 days you're collecting evidence that this is a life is more pleasurable to not drink or have at least that relationship with alcohol than it is to. So hopefully at that point it's almost a turning point over the hill where it's like, and that's where I imagine you say that little light bulb moment and something clicks and it's like, oh, actually I probably now have more evidence that this is positive to not do than the other way around.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I've got there's a little exercise I'll do with clients, which is always like a little seesaw. And we're looking to sort of see where the seesaw ends up and its pros and cons of alcohol. And when you get to this point, and this is where it gets exciting, where you start to feel some of the benefits that you can't feel and recognize, even though I share it all the time and I explain it to people, you've got to feel it for yourself. But when you start to get, I mean, you just mentioned then about getting the day back at the weekend. It's even more than that, though, because you get, you know, the evening. So let's say, you know, I would normally have a beer at, say, 6 o'clock. And I normally go to bed about 9:30, to be fair. 3.5 hours, Monday to Friday, I get back. So I've got 2 working days given back to me there. Do you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, you've got your weekends back because you're not, you know, waste just roaming around the house in your jammers because you're still feeling rough from the night before. So the amount of time you get, the clarity of thought, the presence, the patience, the stress levels reducing, anxiety disappearing, losing weight, starting to look better. People will start to say to you, wow, you're looking well. Everybody I talk to, and I got it myself, you know, everybody says, you look really well. You look less tired. Your skin looks quite clear. Your eyes are white. My eyes are blue. And, you know, when you look in the mirror, you think they're blue. They're not like a murky green color, whatever they went to, you know. You've got more energy. You've got more about you, you know, your conversation. You're just more confident, you know. It's massive. And I think that's where it starts to get exciting. And when you get to that point, So I'm sort of hovering around the mid-40s, you're 66 days. But around that point, it's then when you get a grip and think, you know, shit, this is good. this is good, this. The only other little thing you've got to work on, and I've had this because it's natural, when you're drinking quite regularly, is you've got to also break down the association of, I now feel shit hot, therefore I'm going to go out on the piss. So what I've done before, years ago, you'd be doing like an 8-week boot camp. Yeah. So nutrition, battering yourself in the gym, you know, looking to get ripped, before and after photos, weighing yourself, body fat, blah, 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 blah. And when you've done that, so it's about 7 weeks of that program, because you're not drinking during this program. Oh, you feel top of the world, you know, you're fizzing, you know. Because you've been eating clean, you've been living right, you've been sleeping good, you've been training hard, you've not been drinking. And both my wife and I did this. And then the reward was at the end of that 8-week boot camp, right, we'll go out now then and just, we'll go and party and celebrate, because that's what you do, you know. That's another little thing that you've got to break, is the relationship. And it comes back to what I said earlier about alcohol's fun, you know, and you treat yourself to a few beers, you know. That's one of the final pieces of the jigsaw, is understanding and realizing that actually, do you know what, sticking 5, 6, 7 pints down your neck and a couple of rum and cokes at the end of the night, it's not a treat anymore, because I've got a grip of all those benefits now, because I've had my period, I've had my tactical break to start with from booze. And I've got the videos and the evidence and everything else that tells me how shit I felt when I was drinking regularly. Piece all that together. And it's at that point, I think, where you can start to then make those behavioural changes where, because we're obviously starting to dip into the subconscious, you know, habits that you've got, which is, you know, like I say, I associate reward, I associate fun, I associate good, I associate feeling great, going out and getting leathered. And that, I think, is the latter part of the process where you've got to sort of break that relationship, if that makes sense.
Definitely. And something that's interesting, how did you approach this conversation with your partner? Was it something that they were all for? They were like, you know what, same? Or, because that's something to navigate as well. I think this is both when we talk about the immediate challenges that I feel people, if somebody's listening, they're like, you know what, Chris, I completely agree. I can see that it's not good for me. I know that I've got a challenge or an issue with it. I really want to start this process of changing. However, my partner drinks a bit, my friends drink a bit. How can I navigate that?
So I think first and foremost is you're being selfish to be kind to others here. That's how I'd piece this together. So first and foremost, you are your number one priority, because you can't be a good dad, you can't be a good partner, you can't be a good friend, you can't be a good businessman or businesswoman if, you know, you've got a poor relationship with alcohol, you're not fit, you're not healthy, your head's not in the game, stress levels are high, anxiety levels are high, you're not going to be functioning well as a human being in your own right. So by default, by addressing, we're primarily focusing on alcohol. It's not just alcohol. It could be that you're in a real shit work environment. It's toxic and you're in the wrong place. It could be that your nutrition's naff, you're snacking wrong, you're not training right, you're injured, whatever it is. So, but from an alcohol perspective, if you've just got a bad relationship with alcohol, addressing that by default will have a positive impact on everyone around you because of all the things that we've been talking about. And it's a good question to ask about partners, whether it's a husband, in my instance, obviously it's a wife, but you know, in other instances, it could be partner, husband, wife, you know. I think if I believe I've got a pretty sound relationship, I've got a very good relationship with my wife, and she was very supportive about what I was doing and why I was doing it. And she'd see me, you know, she would be the one that would see me with the head and hands light, and she'd see the amount of stress that I was under when I come home and I'm on call and I've got phone calls coming in. She was very supportive, but it's interesting that it does change the dynamic a little bit. So I was, you know, completely and utterly sober, not a drop, not even an alcohol-free 0.005% drink in just shy of 2.5 years. And yeah, the dynamic of the relationship does change a little bit, because my wife and I, well, we met clubbing, you know, we met, you know, at dance clubs and stuff, you know, and they sort of rave me way through the 90s sort of thing, you know. So we, you know, we just went out partying all the time together. But I think if you've got a sound enough relationship and they support you and they want the best for you, then I think as long as you're open and honest and the reasons why you're doing it and how you feel, then in most decent relationships, you'll get support. Of course, and I do see it, you know, sometimes it does cause a breakdown in those relationships because they're not quite right. And I've seen that quite a bit.
Begs the question though, doesn't it? And this is something that I speak about to my clients quite often, which is, if we put it into the perspective of friends first, then we'll go to relationships. Because this is a common fear, is if I stop drinking, my friends won't want to invite me out, right? Do you have friends or do you just have drinking buddies? Yeah. There's a difference between the two, right? Yeah. Drinking partners or friends. If they're your friends and like you have strong foundations with these people, the reality is, and I see this really often, it won't make a difference. They'll fully appreciate and accept why you're doing it. And if anything, you might positively impact and influence others because you'll be leading from the front. And so frequently have I seen my clients lead from the front with their friends, and then their friends feed back to them and go, you know what? I've been thinking about doing this for a long time too. I just didn't want to be the first one.
Yeah.
Right. And then I think equally when it comes to your personal relationships, so like your intimate relationship with your wife or your partner, whomever, similar, is that potentially it will just bring awareness to the cracks within the relationship. And I think a lot of this, both sides, it comes down to clear communication, communicating why this is important to you, why you value this change, why you would like their support in whatever means you feel is going to help support you through this process. And then whatever comes next needs to come next. So if that's the case that the relationship is strong, you've got strong foundations, more likely than not, your partner's going to go, cool, I totally appreciate that. I think that's really courageous of you to do. I may or may not join you. If I don't, that's fine. And we will navigate that. And then, like you say, sometimes there will be situations where a relationship can break down as a result, but begs the question of, were the relationship foundations built on sand or were they built on concrete? Were they purely built on the basis that we're convenient and entertaining for each other's lifestyle, or is it that we've got a deeper, more intimate connection there?
Yeah, and that's the fact. You know, I was lucky, good relationship with my wife. We're still together. She still drinks reasonably regularly, to be fair. But that's so be it, sort of thing. You know, friends, not lost any friends. They were all very supportive. So I guess I'm grateful for that because they were good friends and they supported the reasons why I was doing what I was doing and were very respectful of it. But I do speak to a lot of people, work with people where that's not been the case, and absolutely right. You know, if your friends, so-called friends, are not necessarily supportive of the decision that you've made, you know, well, they're not proper friends, are they? You know, and you, as hard as it may be, you'd be better off without those friends and rebuild a network of friends that actually have got a bit more interest in you and, you know, and you know, the looking out for you, sort of, you know, sort of thing, really. So it, as hard as that is, you know, that could be the reality of going through this sort of process. But and that's an interesting point, really, Jack, because that's something else. And I was having this conversation yesterday. You know, you peel back, you sort of clear the mist of alcohol. You know, so let's say we're into day 45, 50, 65, 66, whatever we're at now, we're around that marker. And we're starting to function now without alcohol. We've cleared the mist, starting to think clear. We've got more time. We're feeling good about ourselves. What it will do, inevitably, is it will start to uncover other things. You know, I remember with myself, there was probably a flatness to me without alcohol, without that sort of little roller coaster, because you have having highs and, you know, you're sort of having the big highs of alcohol and the big bloody lows with it. You obviously, your emotions become a little bit more stable, should we say, and a little bit more constant as a rule. And then you're starting to deal with real emotions, proper emotions, you know, And there may be more digging to do there. You know, there may be things that unearth and are uncovered that may even explain reasons why you've been drinking a little bit regularly. You know, you're dipping into a bit of childhood, you're dipping into a bit of trauma, you're dipping into, I've got an example, close example to me that probably not allowed the grief process to happen. And therefore that's triggering probably drinking a bit more regularly. So, but until you've got booze out of the way, you can't work on that. And then, you know, certainly in terms of how I like to work with clients, I think at that point, once we've got a healthy relationship with alcohol, well, then everything else can be worked on. There's no point me doing some work with someone on, really, you can do work in a business and you know, and on leadership, which some of my clients are asking for. But if they've got a shite relationship with alcohol and getting pissed every night, well, you're not going to be a great leader, are you? Because you're going to be feeling like shit every day. So let's sort that out first, and then we'll get stuck into the productive stuff, you know. So I've gone off on a few tangents there, but yeah, that's hopefully that's answered your question.
It's so prevalent though and poignant, that point being that so many people will not necessarily recognize that drinking, excessive drinking, and maybe their relationship with alcohol is often a symptom rather than a cause. So it is usually because of something else that we then start using that as a tool, and then that becomes habituated. So I think you're exactly right, is that what often happens is there's a bittersweet process to start with when you do stop drinking alcohol, because it brings other things to the surface. It wasn't that those things didn't exist before, which is sometimes what people can believe. It's like, I've just created lots of problems. That's not true. They were already present. You just were avoiding them and numbing them or escaping from them using the tool of alcohol, cause and effect. So that it, be prepared for that as well, is that when you stop drinking, these things will come to present themselves to you, and it will give you a great opportunity to work on them and grow, because now you can actually see the wood for the trees.
Yes.
As that dust settles and the alcohol starts to subside, you can then go, ah, cool, actually, alcohol's not present. And I really fucking hate my job. And so it's like, now that makes sense, right? I can see why I was excessively drinking, because I really don't enjoy my day to day. And again, that's going to be a hard process to confront to start with. But from a long-term perspective, it's going to serve you significantly better to deal with the root cause, as opposed to just focus all of your attention and energy on the symptom.
100%. And as I say that, sometimes that can just catch you off guard a little bit. I mean, for myself, if I think about changes that I made, so once I'd removed alcohol, I'd done a lot of work around behaviours, around habits, around values, around beliefs, just around my own mindset. You know, I was probably quite a fixed mindset, you know, in the days of old. I was quite procrastinated quite a bit, planned a lot and then planned a little bit more. I've sort of really done a lot of work to adopt more of a growth mindset. So just crack on, don't worry about making a few mistakes, just deal with it. But I think when I was full of alcohol, that made me, because of the stress levels, that made me dither more and procrastinate more anyway. But when I peeled everything back, something that I noticed is I am quite an energetic bloke, should we say. You know, I am at times a little bit extrovert. I do like to muck around a little bit. I like being a little bit childlike, to be fair, because I think that's quite good for you, to be honest. I love messing around with my lads. But equally, what I found is, whereas I've got myself down as a complete out and out extrovert, actually that isn't the case. And then there was one point where I thought, maybe I'm actually like an introvert then and not an extrovert, but I'm not, because I still like, you know, messing around a little bit. Then it's only a word I've come across relatively recently, but there is something in the middle called an omnivert, which is actually a mixture of the two. I thought, well, that's exactly where I sit. But I always thought I was right over here, you know, the class guy, Mr. Gregarious, Mr. Energetic. But actually, I'm definitely sit here, because the times when I'll flick to this part of the spectrum, you know, and I'll sit and listen, particularly in my job as a gaffer and a director in recruitment, I'd spent in the last sort of probably the last 5 years of my career since I'd stopped drinking, the amount of time I spent listening increased tenfold, you know. That was always beforehand. It was always, well, I need to talk as much as I can, sort of thing.
So that comes to that ability to be present, though, as well, doesn't it? Like you mentioned earlier, when you lack that ability to be present because cortisol levels are high or whatnot, you then do feel like you need to continuously talk, and that's how we move the conversation forward. Whereas, as you know, and it's coaching 101, shut up and listen.
Two ears, one mouth, and all that. Two ears and one mouth. But yes, that's, and that's, that will have inevitably helped me in my chosen career now and moving into coaching on a full-time basis, because that's obviously a bit of a superpower as far as coaching is concerned. You know, you've got to sit and listen and leave some space for people to do their own thinking and talking. But if you'd have asked me that, you know, if we were doing this, you know, a decade ago, you know, just Mr. Gregarious, you know, man about town, you know, cock of the north, whatever you want, flipping, call me, you know. So, yeah, that's been quite a change, actually, quite an interesting change since I've, got control.
Nice. I like that, man. And as we wrap this up, I've got a closing tradition on the podcast. Definitely not ripped off from Stephen Bartlett or anything like that. So I'm going to ask you a question. I want the first answer that comes off the top of the dome.
Okay.
You can time travel back to any point in time. Where would you go and why?
This isn't my life. This is any time.
Any time.
When it started. I'm a big fan. I like science and I like facts, yeah. I'm not a massively religious person. That's not to say it's not okay to be religious. Everyone's got a choice. I want to go back to the point we started, the Big Bang. If that's what it was, I want to see that happen. I want to see that happen.
Right, controversial take. What's your opinion on what happened?
I'd like to think that there was something scientific, mm-hmm. an explosion, whatever it is, a sort of a creation of the matter that now forms our existence. I get that periodic table out. You all remember it from school. You know, it was created in some sort of scientific experiment once upon a time. That's where my head's at, because I just, you know, that I just thought, well, because it's real. It's, you can touch it, you can feel it. So therefore, it's fact, it's science. You know, that's where my head's at with this.
Love it. I love that question, because it's so, the answers we get are so varied. We've got some people who will answer from a space of just like their own personal interest, similar to what you're doing. Your answer was there. Maybe it's something you've just been thinking about recently. Mm-hmm. Have some where they'll go back to a quite emotional point in their own life, or some where it's like, I want to be a part of the Peaky Blinders or something like that. So I think it's a really good question to finish up on, because it gives us an understanding of like you as a person and where your mind's at. But yeah, I agree. That would be fucking awesome, wouldn't it? Like, just imagine if you were sat on another planet, or like this little spinning rock, and you were able to, like a firework display, you were there with a bag of popcorn just watching.
Got your popcorn, just look at that now. Look at that.
100%. I agree. Mate, it's been awesome today. I think we've dropped some incredible bombs on of value and wisdom in here today that I know a lot of people are going to benefit from. So I appreciate you hopping on today and giving me your time just before Christmas.
Good, man. Good to see you. Take care. See you, mate.
Guys, I appreciate you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did and you found it valuable. To make sure you don't miss an episode like this in the future, hit that subscribe button. But until then, take ownership, take action, and keep hustling.